So we began studying Tuf Nun Aleph, which is on page 77. And we're almost halfway through this Siman, but every single paragraph stands on its own. And we're talking about how to kasher akelim for Pesach. And we're up to Seif Zayin. Now on the top left it'll say Lamentes. Yeah, I call it 77, but it's really Lamentes. And about two-thirds of the way down, you'll see Seif Zayin. Now the discussion here is about something called Keren. Now what I mean by Keren is that there are certain materials that Chazal say we're afraid to put them into boiling hot water and do Hagola to be makshe them because they may break. And when a person's afraid that something may break, like the classic case in contemporary life would be plastic. If you have soft plastic, well, we could talk about hard plastic as a separate category, but some types of plastic, if you put them into boiling hot water, they get bent out of shape or they break. And you're afraid of being makalkel, of rooting the kli, so the Chazal made a takana, don't be magil such a kli, don't kasher it, you're stuck, you know, that's it, there's no way out. Why? Because we're afraid you're not going to really do a good job. So yesh misha omer de kapos asuyos mikeren, you have spoons that are made of keren. Keren could be, let's say, for example, the horn of an animal or something like that. Ein lo takana behagola. You cannot avail yourself of the possibility of hagola, of dipping them into boiling hot water. The kevan shemiskalkalim b'mayim, if the heat of the water is so intense that it boils on top, then the kli itself, this kapos shel keren, will be dilma chayis alay, will be, is miskalkalim b'mayim, since they get ruined in the water. And therefore chayshinon, Dilma Chayis Alai, perhaps he'll have literally Rachmanis, you know, he'll have compassion on the Kli, and he won't go through with the Hagola the way that we require to do so. We'll take a look now at the Mishnah Berurah.
All he's really doing is stating a fact. He's not saying there's not going to be any kind of solution at this point.
No, there are many cases here in this Siman where there's actually no. There's no solution. You know, once the halacha says that you can't kasher it, then that's it. You can't kasher it. In the army, because for many years, about 13 years of my life, I used to go every Erev Pesach, right, to kasher kelim in the army. And there we had a heter to be machsher plastic kelim. What happens is when they feed the chayalim and the chadar ochel, they feed them on plastic dishes which are washed, you know, through hot water, and that plastic is called hard plastic. And in all my years, about 13 years that I did have shekelim in the army, we never ever had an occasion where one of those kelim was destroyed or cracked. So we relied on that heter. And again, the heter was, it came from Rav Gorin, if you heard of Rav Gorin,
sure.
Rav Shlomo Gorin. He was in charge of the army at that time. Later he became chief rabbi, but that was when he was the chief rabbi of the Israeli army. And he enacted this heter, and he said that there are two categories of plastic. This is not the plastic that Chazal had in mind when they created this takon. So for all those years, that's what we had to do. I mean, for the army to buy a whole new set of dishes for Pesach would be virtually impossible. I mean, you're talking about... I don't know, millions, you know what I mean? So that's where they relied on that heter, and that's what we did on an annual basis. So again, in every case, if you decide that there's a chayis alayu, that there's a real fear that he might not do a job because you expose it to hot water and it breaks, then you can't use it for Pesach. You simply have to replace it. You have to buy new kelim. And that's what he says over here in the Mishnah Berurah, about five lines up from the bottom of the page, Asuyas Mikeren. And he says, Hu adinim rak hakata shalehem Asuyas Mikeren. Sometimes they used to use, in knives especially, in order to create a handle, so the knife itself was metal, that's right. No problem. But the handle was made of either wood or sometimes keren. It was made of like this kind of a thing that would break. And he says the same logic applies even in this case, that those knives cannot be kosher through agola because they're
let's say if you put tape around the handle, can you kosher the blade? The blade you can kosher of the knife.
Right. No, I don't think so. I don't think we do any of that stuff. It's a kli has to be seen and defined as an entity in itself.
I still remember my parents had knives. I don't know how my mother got the stuff out. They got some of the stuff out, which had handles and knives which were not an integrated piece. They were really, the handle and the knife and the blade were really separate things which had been put together.
But could you take them apart to do that?
I guess you...
I don't know. That's complicated. Because if you can't take them apart, and that's what we discussed on Thursday, that there are particles, we're afraid that there are particles of chametz that are caught in between.
In that area where you're okay.
In the cracks, you know, if they're separated. So we came to the conclusion that the only way of being machshir such a knife would be through a combination of what's called libun and hagol. How do you combine libun and hagol? You have to actually go into those cracks and burn out whatever in there, and then the rest of the kli you could just subject to agola. Now he has something here in Nun Hei, which he calls peril mutter. I'm not sure exactly what it is. In the Targum on the bottom he calls it sedef. So maybe if we have a chance later, we'll try to figure out what that is. But in any event, it's a kind of material that's apparently tough as you can get. And it's not similar to a keren, and therefore we're going to be machshir it. Now, what's the deal with wooden utensils? So, if you take a look in the Mechaber in Novah Ches, he says echad clay eight. Echad clay eight. V'echad clay evan. V'echad clay matechas. Dinam lachshiram behagol. So he's got here three categories of materials of utensils that we're machshir with hagola. He's got wooden utensils, he's got stone utensils, and he has mateches, which means metal. Let's take a look at the Mishnah Brura, which you'll see here, Nun Vav, which is almost three lines, but let's call it four lines up from the bottom at the end of the line. He says, Echad Kli Eitz, but Dafka Ima Kli Chalak, Belishum Sedek Vigumo. In other words, it's very common that if you have like wooden spoons and so forth, you'll see that there are cracks and crevices in the wood. Mm-hmm. In that case, he says, no, you're in trouble again, because as we said before, you have pieces of chametz, actual be'en of chametz, that get trapped in that sedek. And again, unless you can burn that out, you're going to have a problem. In a wooden kli, I wouldn't suggest burning it out. You'll end up with a burnt kli. Okay, that's as far as those three categories are concerned. Now the Ramah, which is back up on top, four lines up from the bottom of the page, he adds another category, which is called Kli Etzem. Kli Etzem is made of ivory, of certain parts of the animal, and that, he says, is subject to Hagol.
Is the ivory... Etzem, or is it what we just spoke about at the very beginning?
Keren. Yeah. He says Kli Etzem, I guess it's made of a certain part of the animal, which is called in English a bone, I guess.
How about bone? That would maybe be bone china?
Maybe bone china, yeah. And he says it's a little bit different, and in a certain sense, if it's made from a keren, then it gets ruined, but if it's made from the etzem, then it doesn't get ruined. So I wish we had a picture here to take a look at what it is. I don't know if they have any new publications of the Mishnah Brura with pictures in it, illustrated Mishnah Brura. I don't have one. Okay, now we get to Siftes. And the Siftes is addressing the following question: is there a difference in terms of Hechsher Kelim for Pesach, between 1 hour and another hour, notice there's a time element, play a role. And the Mishnah Berurah says, first we'll read the Mechaber. The Mechaber says in Omer Tes, Hamagil Kodem Shachamishis. We're going to find a certain leniency in the halacha if he does the Hechsher Kelim in its proper time, which is before Chametz emerges as an Iser. Now, keep in mind that Chametz is very unique. Why? Because, and I know of only one other example of this, it's called Heter Bola, meaning at the time that you used it, it was Heter. It only became Iser later on. So you can have one situation in which, let's say, Chametz fell in on Pesach into a pot that's cooking on the fire, and the Belia of the Tama Iser was a Tama of Iser because it happened on Pesach. But in the normal case, when we talk about Chametz Dika Kelim, we're talking about Kelim which is Heter Bola, which means that at the time that the Belia took place, when you cooked, let's say, cereal in a pot, at that point, right, hot cereal in a pot, at that point, it was Heter, because it was during the year. So in real terms, in time zones, that's called Kodem Shah Hamishis, before the fifth hour of Erev Pesach. And to what extent are we going to be lenient? So he says the following: Yochol lahagil biyachad kli rishon ukli sheni ukelim shebolu dover muot vieno choshesh. So let's just review of some of what we did on Thursday. We spoke about two categories of kelim. One is a kli. Again, I don't mean to say this exhausts all the categories, but I'm just saying the conscious that's relevant to us now are these two categories. The categories are kli rishon and kli sheni. So take, for example, if you have spoons that you use in bowls to eat something out of a bowl. So you put the cereal was cooked in a pot, right. Then you pour the cereal into a bowl. The spoon only comes in contact with what's called a kli sheni, as opposed to the bowl itself, the receptacle. That's called the iri kli rishon, which is a discussion that I'm not going to go over right now. Then you could have a kli which is used in a kli rishon. Let's say the large spoons that are used to stir the pot while the pot is actually on the fire. That's called kli rishon. Now, are you allowed to take these two categories of kelim, like the large spoon and the small spoon, the large spoon that's used on a kli rishon and the small spoon that's used on a kli sheni, and are you allowed to be magil them together? Meaning, should we be afraid that maybe because the more profound blia of absorption of the taste of chametz is in the larger spoon, not just simply because of its size, but also because of the fact that it's on the fire.
Right.
Would that have some sort of a negative impact when, because the principle of Hechsher Kelim, again, we're not going to go over this right now, but Kibolo Kachpolto, is that there's a plita. Plita is the reverse of blia. So there's blia inside, and now through the process of Hagola, we have plita, which the absorbed chametz spits itself out, so to speak. So now you have in one pot, you have this gigantic vat, and you're putting it into the pot simultaneously, two different kelim. One is a kli, like the largest spoon that we gave the example, which is a kli rishon dika kli, and that has a very profound blia. And the other kli is a kli sheni dika blia. So he says, v'yeno choshesh, there's no problem. And why is that so? So he says, Shebolog Dovar Muat. Those are the three key words here in the Mechaber. The Eino Choshesh. In other words, what we have here is a blia of a klisheni. And a klisheni is not really boleh. As we're machmir, and we certainly require Hechsher Kelim, even for a kli katan, even for a Dovar Muat, even for a klisheni. But that's not considered much of a blir. It's more of a chumrah that we're machmir with regard to Pesach. But again, all this will become clear in the next siman. So we really don't know enough yet to evaluate this sif in Shulchan Aruch, and that's why the Mishnah Berurah already tells you That's two lines up from the bottom. Yisbar l'kamam b'siman tof nun beis. So we'll have to wait a little bit until we get to there. So at this point, let's fast forward to Sif Yud. Salim shemolchem behem habosah. We have a principle called Moliach harehu kiroseach. Because you can have, according to halacha, you can have something that's cold and it's considered hot. No, it's all bliya takes place through something hot. So how could you have something that's cold and it'll be bliya? And the answer is malicha.
Isn't that like you're using a knife to cut an onion or something like that?
Maybe well, that's a little bit different. That's called duchi de sakina, or it's called a dover charif in the case of an onion. Mm-hmm. But the principle is the same. That sometimes there's bliya even without heat. You know, it's our, right. Cardinal rule in Kalev, in Blias Kalev, is heat. It's got to be hot. Is it hot from a Kli Rishon, from Iri Kli Rishon, from Kli Sheni? Iri Kli Sheni, we go through all the different, or through Eish, and we go through all the different possibilities. But what's common to all those possibilities, you talk about something that's very hot. The halacha does recognize the possibility of Blias Tam, even in something that's not hot. And you're mentioning one case, which is duchke de sakina because of the sharpness of the knife, or dover charif in the case of an onion. But here we're talking about something different, which is also, again, fits into the same category. And that's called maliach, when you salt something. Salting creates a real serious blia, even though everything is cold. And the problem here is that during the course of the year, you use certain kinds of kalim for the purpose of malicha. And what do? After the shkita is done, you take the basar and you want to get rid of the dam. And in order to expel the dam, you place salt over the meat. And this is done in a certain kalim. It's called a sal, literally a basket. And now there's a possibility that some chametz might have gotten mixed in. Again, if it's basar, that's not really chametz. But
to the best of my recollection, when I remember my mother koshering meat, she had a big bucket, which she had a grate above it, right? And the stuff dripped, I think, into the bucket.
Could be, yeah, especially livers, maybe, and stuff like that. So he says the following. Let's take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, two lines up from the bottom. He says, the kevan deino nizer kol hashan b'melech mechametz. Shema hoya shama'at chametz v'kibel akli tam ma'at v'chozer v'nosein tam v'pesach. In other words, maybe, again, do we have any reason to believe so? Well, if you're not careful, then maybe there's a possibility that chametz got mixed into the salt, and when you put the salt on the meat, there was some chametz there. And again, since the salt heats up the meat, I don't mean that biologically, you know, with a thermometer, but maliach harehu kiroseach, then some of the tam now goes into the meat, and from the meat into the sal, this utensil, this receptacle that you're using for the malicha. But the Mechaber says, yesh misha cholik. And the Mishnah Berurah explains that achzuke yisurei lo machzikina. We have a principle in halacha that if we don't know that something is asur, we don't invent possibilities. And this really, this machlokas touches on so much with regard to Pesach and preparations for Pesach. There are people who will paint their houses on Pesach, you know, or people who won't eat fruits that unless they have a peel on them, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking, and it's ad infinitum. You go on and on and on. And this is really the issue. One opinion, that's the first opinion quoted in the Mechaber, and he's applying this to the case of Moliach, is that if you don't know whether this salt had chametz in it, you know, it doesn't have a badatz hetzer on it, you know, it's sealed hermetically, then you have to worry about the possibility that this chametz. Again, I can use that salt on Pesach technically, because I see there's no chametz there, but I've been using salt in this pan, in this receptacle over the course of the year, in order to salt my meat. And when you salt meat, it becomes roseach, it becomes boiling hot, again, a halachic hot, I mean, where the blia goes in and out. And maybe there's a possibility that in the salt there was an admixture of chametz. And even if it only happened once in the last 365 days, that's enough to be a problem. But the Yesh Misha Cholik applies a universal principle called Achzuke Yisur Lo Machzikinon. You know, it's all Isurim based on the fact that I know there was something awesome. You know, I saw a mouse carrying chametz. Remember, we discussed this into the house. So then, but shall I finish my bedikah and then say, wait a minute, maybe after I bedikah, when I turn my back away from the house, maybe the mouse came into the house. You know, that's then there's ein l'dover sof. You know, there's no end. So the question, what exactly needs hechsher for Pesach, and it's a question that's going to come up over and over again, is first addressed here in this sif, with regard to the solemn Shemolchem Bahem was. V'nirim kidvar, the good news is that the Mechaber, and this for Sfaradim is very reliable. You know, they say that today, I heard a statistic that 55% of the Jews in this country are Sfaradim. Yeah, we're not used to that in the West, right? Except in certain countries, like Panama or maybe in Mexico. I don't know, Mexico's half and half, but there are countries in which the Sephardic population, but here in Israel, the Sephardic population is the rov. In France today also, it's the rov. And many other countries. So we can rely, if we're Sephardim, on the Mechaber, right? So v'nira kidvar. Until we get to the Ramah. For Ashkenazi Jews, the Rambam always gives us a little bit of a chumrah, if you know what I mean. And he writes, "V'tov." And here we're turning to page 78. Lahag ilam ol leknos chadoshim. Now this is a major investment. You know, today we're all affluent, but back in the day, right. I mean, my parents—they were machshir kelim. I remember my father would spend endless hours to be machshir kelim. We didn't have another option. And here the Rambam is saying that I have to imagine that there was chametz mixed in. So again, if you're talking about silverware and pots and pans, you know, fashteitzach, I understand that you used it with chametz. But now you're talking about a sal that's designated for melichas basar. I mean, melech doesn't have chametz in it, last time I checked. And the meat is not chametz. Why do I have to cash in this kli? But the Rambam says, tov la'gilon. And Mishnah Berurah tries to embellish this, as you'll see on the top of page 78, and he says, "Al yidei erui kli rishon." Well, this is at least the good news here. There are two types of hagola. One type of hagola is when you pour hot water over a kli in order to get kasher. The other is where you put the kli, immerse it totally inside a larger kli, and you make sure that the larger kli is full with water that boils. Here, the Mishnah Berurah is telling you the following. That since this itself is a chumrah, because achzakuria, we have no reason to be machzik isur here, but we're thinking maybe there's some chametz there. So he says, in such a case, all you need is irui kli rishon. Now this is going to be very good because, for one reason, is because irui kli rishon is a lot easier to do when you have a large surface area in the kli or a surface area on the shayish, whatever it might be, and what we're going to say is that if you have this large sal, you know, that's relatively large, and it's hard to do the hagola to put it into a larger vat, then in the case of a salting kli, where we don't know that there was chametz in the salt, we're going to allow you to do iri kli rishon. Now again, in iri kli rishon, you have to make sure that every spot is covered. You know, that's also a challenge. You know, you have to pour boiling hot water. Let's say you put up some sort of mecham mayim, you know, which heats up the water, and then when you pour it, you have to cover all the areas of the surface. So now he says the following: O liknos chadoshin perish in ef shel agilin lefish yesh bem gumos. And he's saying basically that if you don't have the possibility of Hagola, even in this case where we don't know for sure there was a mixture of chametz, nevertheless you're going to have to replace them and buy new kelim. Let's go back to the Bir Aluch on the previous page. And he says the following. Ayin b'shiboli aleket, shemarot, now we're back on 78, shemarot b'shem, we just find the, oh, ayin b'chayot. Shekasav der rishonu zu b'shem yesh omen v'yesh hapos v'rov haposkim svir lehu titzarech libun. Now this is wild, because how far do we go with the principle Moliach Hareyu Kiroseach. Right, when you say something is roseach, it could mean one of two things. If you want to be more lenient about it, it means it's like cooking with water. If you want to be more machmer, it's like the heat without water, that's direct blia, which is called limun. That requires limun. So it's unbelievable. Until now, we've been discussing about this sal, shemolchem, ebos, that maybe used it with chametz. We don't even know that that's the case. And the Machaber's first opinion says you don't even need Hagolah. I mean, that was the second opinion of the Machaber, but the one that he accepted. And there were those who say you need Hagolah. Now we have a third opinion, which is quoted in the Chayyadon, that even Hagolah is not sufficient. Why? Because Moliach Harei Kuroseach makes it into a direct heat. There's no medium of liquid, and therefore you require limud. And the Mishnah doesn't like this. He says, "Lo nehira klal." The Ramah the answer because of the sagi lebagola. Right, well, the Ramah gives you two options, one of which is hagola, and the other which is to replace them. But nowhere does he discuss limun in this context. So if we're being machmir because of the Ramah, let's not go beyond the Ramah's chumra and let's accept hagola. Now, in the balance of this bir aloch, he goes through different girsos. Different possible texts, he says. But he says that we don't really have to go through this, and he doesn't require limud, and hagolah is sufficient. When do we require limud? So if you would have asked me, I would have said that the classic limud in our context would be a frying pan, because the heat goes directly into the pan. Says the Mechaber, no, on Yud Aleph for the top page 78. Machvas, a frying pan, shemetagnin, that we fry inside of it, ba, is muteris bagol. All you need is hagol, you don't need limud. And the reason for that is because it's a medium of liquid. In other words, what do you do with this frying pan? You add oil, and then you add the meat or whatever, the patties, you know, you could have chometsticker, you know, pierogi, patties, whatever it might be. But since there's a liquid, therefore that's considered bishul. It's not considered like a fio or tzli, where there's no medium of liquid, and therefore hagolah suffices. And that's what the Ramah emphasized here on the top line. He says, "Perish sheyotzkim ba shemen lafoso." In other words, that before you use this machmas, you first pour oil into it. And since you pour oil into it, that makes it into bishul. It's like cooking. It's got a medium of a liquid.
Even if you have it in there and you left something in there and the oil is already burnt off?
That's an excellent question. What happens if at the beginning of my use there was a liquid and then the liquid evaporated?
Right.
Do we say that now the process continues and therefore I need limud? That's question number one. Question number two is, what happens if you put dough into a frying pan and instead of frying it with oil, you put it into the oven and the heat now bakes the bread without any medium of a liquid? So if you take a look in the Mishnah Brura, number Samach Gimel, he says, Dafka v'tanur shenefer bo chametz b'li mashke tzorch limud, avolo machvas. In other words, there's a difference between baking and frying, because in the case of frying you have a liquid, you have the oil, and therefore all you need is hagolah. But in the case of baking, where you put it directly into the oven, that's not like a frying pan. That has real serious belia of esh without a medium of a liquid. Well, now he addresses your question. How could we tell you that you could rely on hagolah for a machvas, for this frying pan, because of the oil? Why aren't we afraid that the oil got, he calls it dried up, it means it was consumed. Now the frying process should require limud because there's no medium of a mashke. El afilu nisraf, even if the liquid, meaning the oil in this case, is completely burnt out. You know, I like to make matzah brei. I don't know if you make matzah brei.
No.
But when we make matzah brei, I mean, within minutes, the oil is gone. I mean, you can't see any shiraim left at all. And if it did like the dolphin amachas, you know, the matzah becomes almost connected, you know, attached to the walls of the frying pan. He says, Adayin yesh lach luchas mashkishon. We still assume that there's some measure of liquid, of moisture, in the object, in what's frying in the pan. And therefore, we don't have to worry about the fact that now I don't see any liquid. The oil is gone. There's some lachlukas, the oil to some extent penetrates into the chametz in this case, and that's enough to allow me to downgrade it to hagola without requiring lead. V'chein adin b'kederish al matecha shemavashlim bo. He says, even in the case of a pot, and you cook in a pot, afshin nidbak l'fon b'dofne akderi, even though sometimes you'll find that there are pieces of chametz that are completely attached to the walls of the kli, and then at that particular point of contact there's no liquid. So I should say that now I need hagol. But basically I think what the Mishnah Berurah is saying is that we look at the process. We don't take the process apart.
Okay.
And we say this is called
dish. Something spills as it's going in and hits a side, it never gets the liquid between it and the side, right? Mm-hmm.
Now, he quotes here in Samach Dalet Machlokes about something called Shuman. In other words, until now we've been discussing oil. Oil is certainly a liquid, but there are fats
which turn into liquids.
Right? They will eventually melt and turn into liquid, but at this point, it's more like a solid than a liquid. You know, like if you eat pshah or something like that. You know, it looks like it's like a jelly kind of thing, you know, which is...
Or they're making grimace, which turns into a liquid.
We call it pshat. It's the same thing, right?
No, pshat and grimace is not the same.
Oh, they're not the same. No, what's the difference
between
the two?
Grimace is two different languages. Right. Grimace is where you take the chicken fat, right?
Right.
And pshat is where you're taking the cartilage and the bone.
Ah, okay, fine. I guess my mother-in-law makes it with a little bit of both somehow. Yeah. You know? In any event,
I mean, how they make it, I don't know, because right. I don't eat that stuff.
Yeah, that stuff, it's not the healthiest stuff in the world. And it doesn't look too attractive, but those who eat it love it. I mean, they'll kill for it. They love that stuff. So he says, what's the status of shuman, of this fatty stuff? He says, yesh, sherotzalom and the shumanein b'chlal mashke, it's not a liquid. It's like the basar itself. It's like the meat itself, or the chicken itself. He says, "Netshav touch mishali de'or." It's like you use the fire without any liquid. It seems that there's no difference between shemen and shuman. Shuman is also close to being a liquid, and we consider it like a liquid. And now we're looking at the Mishnah Berurah number Samach Hey. Hatam hakanal shari ofen bo im mashke, because any process of frying or baking is with this mashke. You'll tell me it's not really water. It's in the classical bishul, it's water, right? You cook something in water, in boiled water. But here it's shemen mali mayim. There's no difference between shemen and mayim as long as it's a liquid. Okay, now what happens with the trays? Right, when you bake cookies, for example, you bake them on a tray. So he says, this is a big chumrah, the af aval ha'agonos sha'ofim bo ugos bien. So you put these, you know, they put the dough directly onto the trays. He says, af shemoshchin tachtov b'shuman, even though you may separate the tray from the dough with some sort of, you know, smearing of oil or fats or milk or butter, which is fat. And he gives you a few examples. He says, Trichim libud midina. And when he says midina, he means there's no psharas here, no compromises. But let's see if we can figure out some of his examples here. He has furimash, which on the bottom he calls tfuse afia, which I think are, what do you call them? Cookie cutters or something along that line, where you pour the dough into a shape.
Shaping things,
yeah. Those shaping things. And they're made of metal, right? Sha'ofenbo tartin, some sort of ugos.
Tartin or tartin?
tartan?
Tartan, it's all like cakes or...
Yeah, like kechlik and things like that.
I would,
Oh, baking cookies.
No, what they call Chauvinbow tartan, those are like those baking forms.
Right, the forms.
Right.
They give it a shape and they go directly into the oven. And I guess he's assuming that even though there's some element of liquid here, nevertheless, it's basically a baking process, and therefore it requires libun.
There's a difference between torten and kuchen. I think torten are things, from the best of my recollection, things like pies, and kuchen are just plain cake, right? Okay. And I would assume that with pies, there's a certain amount of liquid that is used.
Okay. Now, so far what we've assumed, and that's the Machaber as he opens up Yud Aleph, is that a frying pan, since it's used in the frying is done with oil, therefore it only requires Hagol. However, the plot grows thicker. Why? Because there's a Yesh Machmirim over here in the Rambam. Now, you never would have guessed that Rambam would be machmir on this, would you? I'm just being cynical. But he says the following. First, let's read the Machaber again. Machvas shemetagnin ba muteres ba'agola. The ili arucha. In other words, it's very difficult sometimes to be magil a machvas because it's very long. Is mesim chetzio v'hofech od mesim chetzio ha'acher. So this is a little bit of a clarification or a qualification of what we discussed earlier. Is there such a thing as hagola piecemeal? Well, again, I don't mean piecemeal in the sense that you could be magil half the kli and not the other half the kli, but what I do mean is that can you do hagola on half the kli and then turn the kli upside down and do hagola on the second half of the kli? And according to this first opinion that we're encountering here in the Machaber, you're allowed to do that. Because again, you have a very, very long kli, and how can you put the entire kli? You would need a vat that goes up all the way to the ceiling. So what you do is you put half of it inside the boiling hot water, then you turn it upside down and you put in the other half. The imi arucha v'yoser, if it's really very tall, milavna ba'emtza. What you're going to have to do is that there's a certain part, a certain segment of the kli, which is not going to get down into the water, no matter what you do. Even if you turn it upside out, there's still going to be a part in the middle. So you have, let's say, the kli that you're using for hagola is 5 feet. Let's say it's a foot high, right? And now you have a kli that's 3 feet high. Right? So if you dip it in, it goes 1 foot, and then you turn it the other way around, you get the other foot. But how do you get the middle foot? So he wants to say that you have to do liman on the middle foot. Because you have when there's no option of agola, the only option to fall back on is liman. And you have to get a blowtorch and torch out the middle part of the kli. You don't have to do the whole kli, because the rest of the kli you can do with agola. So if I were to quiz you, when do you have Hagol and Liban on the same kli? It's this case in Sif Yud Aleph of a kli that is so long that there's no way you can do Hagol and the whole kli even if you turn it upside down, and therefore you have to integrate a bit of
Liban. You're supposed to do Hagol or the whole kli at one time.
Well, if all things are equal, in an ideal world, you do Hagol and the entire kli at one time. In this case, you're going to have to turn it upside down because of the height of the kli. But now we're going a step further, that even after you turn it upside down, you're not going to get the entire kli into the water. So now at this point, you need liban on the middle part of the kli of this machlas arucha in order to allow you to do hechsher hagola on the rest of the kli. However, what kind of a liban do you need with regard to a kli that only needs hagola? So for example, we discussed at great length yesterday a case of a kli that has gumos, it has cracks in it, and we're going to be machmer because of the cracks, and we're going to require libun. That's a chumra. Here also you have a kli shemetagnet bo, and really in technical reasons a hagola would be enough, but we're going to add the libun element to it. Now, there are two categories of limud. One category of limud, which is mind-boggling, it's almost a non-entity, which is the real limud, is nitzotzos yotzos. It gets so hot that the sparks start flying. Then we have another level of limud, which is called limud kolduhu. And if you take a straw and you put it, you touch the kli is so hot that the straw goes up in flame. Like a straw is something that's easily flammable. So the Rama points out that in this case, where the kli itself is a kli of hagola, not a kli of libun, but just in the absence of the possibility of hagola, thus we can't orchestrate the hagola. So we do libun, then libun kolbu is sufficient. Shekash nisrafol of sagile, that's enough. All this is according to the Mechaber and the first presentation of the Rama. But now we get to the difficult news here. V'yesh machmirin l'lavein ha-machmas. Now we require libun on the entire frying pan. From tip to toe, get yourself a blowtorch. I mean, this is going to be sparks are going to be flying in this case, because the yesh machmirin. And if you take a look in the Mishnah Berurah, which is the first of the wide lines on the bottom of the page, he says, "Lefa'amim nisyabesh hashuman ve'isa nefes be'en al hamachmas." This was exactly what we were talking about before, namely that the oil gets consumed, and then the bread or the chametz that's in the machmas is still frying on an open fire, and that therefore it requires limud. So basically, the Mishnah Berurah is telling you that the Ramah, in the name of the Yesh Omrim, the Yesh Machmirim in Machmas, is referring to this issue that the oil has already been consumed. We said before in the Das HaMakilim that we can be Mekil, it still requires nothing more than Agola. And the reason for that is because there's always some Lachluchus left over, some amount of moisture, Episkiblibin, from the Shuman. But now we're saying no, the shuman is gone. That's history. And now you have hot chametz that's burning on a fire without any medium of liquid. And therefore, because of this chumrah, we're going to need libun on a machmas. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah records, the Ramah records this chumrah. V'nagim l'lavno l'chatchila miu Bagola sagile bagolin aimbo gumos. Now, if you're going to ask the Rav what to do, so the Ramah says we're going to tell him to do libun on these frying pans, and that's a gavaldig chumra. Again, back in the day when they used to reuse the same frying pan from Pesach to from Chametz to Pesach, buying new frying pans was too much of a burden financially. And the minig is, and that's the way the Ramah is going to tell this person, is to do libun. Again, it could be that the libun here is a relatively easy libun in the sense it's kash nisraf, but nevertheless it's libun. Which means if I ask you what's the minig as far as a machfas is concerned, and your answer is going to be libun, that's absolutely correct. But then you have a b'dieved situation. What happens if a person went ahead and he took this machfas and instead of doing a libun with a breader on it, he put it into hot water as hagol? So then Ramah says it depends. If it's ein bo gumos, if this machfas has no cracks or crevices in it, it's absolutely smooth from tip to toe, then b'dieved, we're going to rely on your hagol. And we're not going to be afraid of chametz b'en. But if this machfas has gumos in it, and they were afraid of what? Of particles of chametz that got trapped in the crevices. In that case, forget it. You must do libun. You have no other choice but to do libun. And I don't know if you'll be able to successfully do libun in this case. But if you can, that's okay.
Well, libun, if you do with a blowtorch, that would be okay.
That would be okay. But again, it's a really tricky business because he seems to be implying here that yesh machmirim lelavim machmas. Wow, I mean, that's a big chumrah. Alright, let's assume that even for the machmirim, who will not allow and will not recognize the validity of hagol in a case of a machmas because the oil gets consumed, nevertheless, they would rely on what's called libun kal. Because as I told you before, libun chomer is almost a non-entity. I mean, as I told you, we kashed Caleb all those years in the army, and I don't think we ever got to the point, we did a lot of libun, but I don't think we ever got to the point of libun chomer. You know, it's really cool, in the army, they have these very large vats with a lip, a thick lip around the top. And when you do the libun, when the reason why we do libun is because the chametz is trapped inside the lip.
Right.
So as far as the bulk of the kli, you can do hagol. The only problem is hagol is a real headache because you don't have enough. You don't have a kli that in the world big enough yet. So we rely on a different head, which is called Evan Milubenis, where we heat up a piece of metal and we dip it into the water that's boiling, and the water overflows.
Right.
But that's not going to help you for the lip, because there you have real chametz that's caught. For there we did libu. But the coolest thing is, you're standing there with the brenner for like 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and all of a sudden, it's wild. I don't know the physics of it, but this is not a meisim nisim of a chassid about his rebbe, but I saw this every year. All of a sudden, the whole thing, like a fire, just shoots out. In other words, the grease that's caught underneath the thing
eventually heats up enough,
and the fire catches and circles the entire room, and it goes up in flames. It's really a sight to see. Anyway, now he talks about kol hakelim tzarf lahagel yisodeihem kemosan yidoseihem kemosan. It's something called yad kli.
Does your army still do the same? You think they still do the same?
Yeah, because to buy new kelim for Pesach is virtually impossible. I mean, you're talking about feeding, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people, you know. This is not like, you know, you go off to a grocery because if that place still exists. They're also, you have to do a major goal. But I'm talking about for the army, it's major. I mean, there are some bases that have just thousands and thousands upon the chayalim, and you have to feed them like three times a day, you know, especially in the Air Force. The Air Force is much more organized than any other part of the army. And it's mostly engineers and so forth and so on, but it's a major undertaking. So as long as I was in the army, they used to call me up for this once a year. But then I got a total shikru. But they're plenty of my friends who are still doing Hesher Kalim in the army, and it's amazing because they put you on buses. Sometimes you travel for hours and hours in each direction, and you have to do the best job you can. And also keep in mind, what you have to do is lock up everything. Meaning there are certain things that you can't do Hechsher on, or certain things that you are Machsher, but you don't want them to use them between now and Pesach.
Right.
So you have to lock it up, and they put these...
So therefore they must have a spare set of stuff, because those dishes and things that you...
Things that you can't do Kashering on. Yeah. But the things that you do Kashering on, they're going to use... But again, you have to lock it up until Pesach.
Right.
Because you don't want anyone to
stop. So what do you do? What do they use in the interim between the time you lock it up?
They eat matzah and stuff like that. And they're very makil about matzah on Erev Pesach. Again, it's a shver zah, because we don't eat matzah on Erev Pesach.
Right.
But in the army, they were makil on that. Because they had no way of feeding the chayalim and stuff. They were chayalim, very religious. They refused to eat the matzah. And then in general, you know, the Rabbanut has to supply matzah shmura. That's also a big headache. Major undertaking. You know, you're talking about one of the largest institutions in Jewish life, you know, if not the largest.
It's difficult enough to make Pesach correctly for a family.
And imagine multiplying by hundreds of thousands. But the locking up process is really interesting, because what they do is they put a sign on the outside of the storage room, wherever the kelim are, and it says, you know, in all language of severity, you're not allowed to open this thing and have access to this. Bipkudat sal. Now, once you write bipkudat sal on the outside, that means you can be taken for punishment.
A court martial thing.
I don't know about court martial, but you could definitely be penalized, you know. And again, is there anyone there who's, you know, I'm just saying, you know, I'm not telling you Lamaisa, but I'm just saying that it's very interesting that the army takes it pretty seriously. And the reason for that is because kashrus is the one thing, and especially Pesach, which is, again, I'm not going to say every last Jew in the army is makban on it, but you're talking about a major representation of the Israeli army. And, you know, if we have to have a situation where a religious Jew could be part of the army, and
you have to cover them.
And that's what the Rabbi Nun is all about in the army, Rabbi Nutzvay. Now, as far as the Yad HaKli, the question is, what happens if he didn't, you know, let's say he put the Kli inside, but he kept holding on to the handle, and the handle of the Kli never actually was submerged into the water.
But you can...
No, I'm just saying, let's say he didn't. I mean, you're right, he should have, and that's what the Machaber is saying. Kol kem tzorach lahagil yisod ha'sem kemoso. But to what extent are we going to go with this? I mean, obviously this is the ideal requirement, l'chatchila, and the Mishnah Berurah explains it on the bottom line here, 78. He says, "Mishum she nishtamish chometz beguf hakli bechamin amrin daholech l'bliya bekula." This is a principle called cham b'mixas cham bekula. Like, let's say, for example, I have trefor and avela cooking in a pot, and I put a spoon in. So the law is that the entire spoon needs heksher. Why? Because cham b'mixas cham bekula. We assume that the bliya goes up and down. It doesn't stay at the bottom, you know, even though that was the only part that was submerged. So here also, the yada kli, the handle of the kli, is also part of the kli. And even if the handle of the kli never came in contact with the chametz, it doesn't matter. It's cham b'mitzvah, cham b'kula. Achein mishun tam ze levad lo hayashayach din ze ele b'kli matechos. When do we apply the principle of cham b'mitzvah, cham b'kula, and the bliya spreads throughout the kli? That's only with regard to metal kli. Oh, here he quotes the cham b'mitzvah, cham b'kula. V'machaber lo koi al kol ha'kelim. Which means, you remember, we had a whole bunch of categories of materials. We had atzomos, and we had cheres, and we had eitz, and all these cases. And there we don't apply the principle of cham miktos or cham bekulo. So it's a little bit odd here that the Mechaber makes this generic statement that seems to be all-inclusive, when in fact, the underlying principle of cham miktos or cham bekulo would only apply in klei matachos. The eitz parur that's made of wood, tzorach lahagil abeis yad shelo, and even though we don't apply the principle of cham miktos or cham bekulo to a wooden keli, nevertheless we require hagol even on the base yad. Al koch chayshin od shevakibel ayad ezer pam chometz al yedei kli rishon sheidicho so betochol lenakoso mi zuma. When he was washing the kli, the handle of the kli came in contact with the hot water that had chometz in it, and as a result, the fact that he did this hadok, he was washing his kelim in a chometz thicker kli, then we assume that there was bliya into the handle of the kli. Again, that's a chumrah. We don't know that there was kabolas bliyas chometz in the handle of the kli, but maybe at some point, inadvertently, he didn't pay attention, and he did hadochas kelim, meaning he washed his kelim together with other kelim that had chametz in it, and even the yad hakli, even the handle of the kli, absorbed the taste of chametz. And based on that chumrah, we're going to say that you absolutely must be magil the handles as well. Oh, but how far are we going to go with this? And now we're on page 79, or Mem, on the top line. Says the Rambam, Miu, however, in lohig ilu hayodos, if for whatever reason he didn't do the hagol, again, if there's still time to do it, we'll tell him to do it, but it's already hours and hours later, is ein less or b'dieved. Wow, he's willing to be makil. Now, if you're talking about other kelim made of any material other than matechos, other than metal, then I understand. We don't apply the principle cham b'mitzvah cham b'kula, and the handles don't even need hechsher. But we said that we're going to require hechsher because in the case of a metal utensil, there's going to be a situation in which cham miktoso, cham bekulo, and even the handles of the kli absorb chametz. But he says that b'dieved ain't less or... Oh, take a look in the Mishnah Berurah, number Samach Tes. That's six lines down. He says, "Afilu beklimatochos," even with regard to metal kelim, where there's certainly a principle of chav miktsas or chav bekulo, nevertheless, we're going to allow b'dieved to use a kli that you did agola to without including the odos. Zokta Mishnah Berurah Mishum de'amrinon, because of the logic, to keshem sheh nivla hachometz behayad al yidei gufa kli, kein ato nifla ben al yidei agola shel gufa kli. Wow, this, I'm telling you, is wild. What he's doing is he's reversing the principle of chav miktsas or chav bekulo. Means blia, that the blia on part of the kli is going to extend to the rest of the kli, even though there was no contact with hot water in the rest of the kli, in this case the yodayim. Now he's going the opposite direction. He's not talking about blia, but about pleita. And he's saying pleita b'miktsosu is pleita b'kulo, which means that we can be maflit the blia from the yad agav the rest of the kli. You know, the yad itself is not submerged in the hot water, but nevertheless, once we're maflit the
rest is considered as
if we were maflit right. the plate of the blia that's in the yad of the kli. And basically, what he's saying, I think, is that a kli is a kli. It's an entity. It's a total, individual, indivisible entity. Is there blia visa in the kli, or is there not? And the answer is that chamik tosel chamik kulo, if there's blia in the kli, there's blia in the entire kli. And plate of a miktosel is complete of a kulo, which means that if you are maflit isa through agola, you maflit isa from the entire kli, even that part of the kli that's not submerged. Mamish, a wild chiddush. Uleidach hashosh lekasam lo sakina b'dieved. Oh, you might ask the following question, that maybe he mixed when he was doing his dishwashing, he mixed the yodayim together with the chametz bien that's in this in the shisel, or wherever he does, in the sink, wherever he does his hadocha. He says that's already a chumrah. We don't know that ever happened, and therefore lo machzikina b'diyev. Now, what does it mean? Nishtamish b'hayodos, kigon shet chavon b'pesach l'sof ha'tavshil pili plon. Can you imagine this? The man actually dips the handle of his kli into that which is cooking inside this tavshil. I mean, it's a little bit wild to say that he would dip the yadayim, unless he means that there are two yadayim on the two sides of the kli, and he's holding on to one of the base yad, and he dips the other base yad into the tavshil. And if that, and if the base yad that he's dipping in has a blia of
color, do that unless you disconnect it somehow.
No, I think he's imagining a reality in which you have, let's say, not two different kelim, but you have two different sides of the kli, like, you know, the pots that have a handle here and a handle there, and he tips it over, and let's say he's pouring hot chametz into another kli, so when he dips it over, he accidentally dips the handle into the pot itself. And in such a case, you're going to have a real issue of blia from the yad. And nevertheless, he says, "B'chol gavni ein lesar tavshil b'achilu kein shehigil es gufa kli." Since he did agol on the main part of the kli, although he didn't dip the handle into the hot water, then we're going to rely on that principle that we mentioned before about the plata, and b'dieved it's going to be okay. Kol zeh mistoma will be yodush and ishtamshu ayodos b'chametz b'chamim. He's saying the following. The reason why we require Hagola on the Yadayim is because we're afraid of this scenario. But in such a case, we could be Mekil b'dieved if they were Magil the Gufa Kli and they left out the handles of the Kli. But in a case where he knows for sure that he dipped this handle into the Tavshil, in such a case we have no room for leniency, and we're certainly going to require Hagol on the handles. So Hagol on the handles really depends on what he knows and what he doesn't know. And there could be three levels. One is when he knows, meaning he knows that the handle dipped into the Kli Sheyesh Bo Chametz, because he dipped the handle in inside. There you require Hagol on the Yadayim, hands down, pardon the pun, and there's no question about it. And then he has other two cases where he doesn't know that the handle ever dipped into the Tavshil Shel Yesh Bo Chametz. And here he has the Lechatchila and the B'diavad. Lechatchila, we're going to be afraid of the possibility that maybe the handle came in contact with Chametz, and therefore we're going to require Hagola on the handle as well. And then you have the B'diavad situation. The B'diavad situation is, why do we have to worry about the possibility that maybe he dipped the handle at one point into a pot on the fire? And B'diavad, we're allowed to rely on the Hagola and the Gufa Kli, even though there was no Hagola on the Yadayim. We'll finish this up with the end of this Mishnah Berurah Samach Tes. And he says, we owed, he says, Yesh Taz, he says, Hechmer Taz, we owed, Sharikot, Bekata Shol Sak. Again, we're getting back to the knife handle, the handle of the knife. Shalohi Elo. And he did not immerse the handle of the sakin inside the water, the hot, boiling hot water of the Hagola. V'noga kata v'pesa b'chamin. And now the kata came in contact with something hot, on Pesach, of course. Is lesser af b'dievet. Taz is going to assume that that handle has a bli of chametz in it, and therefore everything's going to be awesome. A pretty big chumrah of the Taz. Let me read that again. Kata shol sakin shol gilo v'noga kata v'pesach v'chamin lesser af b'dievet. Now why is that so? I mean, we don't know that the kata has a bli of chametz in it. Oh, mishum the rov upon magia tashcha chametz gam v'beis yad shol sakin kigon al yidei lechem cham v'chadom. He's saying that when you slice bread, and of course the bread is hot, straight, fresh gebacked, right? He's saying that we have a serious fear that even the beis yad of the sakin came in contact with this hot bread that he's cutting. And therefore we're going to require Hagola on the kat as well. Now, if he wasn't magil, in the evidence we said it's not asur. V'afil l'chatchil yochol l'hagil al yidei erui shema'ara alein. Okay, I think we'll stop here. I would like to make a note of where we got up to, but I don't see... Okay, I'll dig up a pencil here.
Can I have, but not...
Yeah.